Welcome back to another episode of Rethink Real Estate. I'm excited for this episode because I get to introduce you to Chase, who's one of our new members of Harcourt's Auctions. Chase has got an extensive background in auctions in the US. And today what we go through, I think, is incredible insight into an industry that has existed for a long time, but has not been accessible to all real estate. And I'm going to give you that insight today so that you can see what I mean by that. And it hopefully gives you a better understanding of what we're trying to do and what we're trying to build with our auction process in North America also. Either way, guys, this is a great and very informative conversation. Hope you enjoy. Welcome to Rethink Real Estate. My name is Ben Brady, and this is a real estate podcast aimed to deliver sales strategies, marketing tips, and business insights from industry experts and myself to build a listing-focused business for the future. Let's get into it. Chase, welcome to Rethink Real Estate.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's funny. Somebody on our team welcoming them to the podcast that you're basically part of because you're part of the company.
It was good to be on here.
Yeah. So, mate, let's cut right to it. The auction world, from a US counterpart perspective, is that I don't know many people outside of sort of our company that have been involved in auction in this space that existed or has been, you know, this thing. A lot of people, again, okay, I'm going to get this out of the system in the beginning. There's a lot of people in Australia and New Zealand that go, well, why isn't auction really a big thing over there? And then when you get here, you ask the same thing. And then you find out it's because the way that the auction structure from a non-distressed perspective has been set up by a couple of companies or a few monopoly holders within the industry that then makes total sense when you find out how they're going to market. Would that be fair?
100%. Absolutely.
So, mate, let's go back and just cut straight through and go down the line of where you got into auctions. Like how did this all eventuate? Were you in real estate? Was your dad in real estate? Like, give me an understanding.
So I think it kind of started way back when, before I really even knew that I wanted to be in this space. My uncle was actually an auctioneer, so the fast talkers going, you know, like almost not, I wouldn't say cattle, but close to that, anything, you know, they would auction anything at all. So I got to see that kind of side of things. But it really started when my dad purchased a home via auction from one of the top, you know, firms in the country here. So I got to see the kind of behind the scenes of how that operated. That one didn't go to a live auction, but I got to see the, you know, all the, you know, the structure of how this worked, the behind the scenes of, you know, the marketing and the buyers that were involved, and really watched that kind of take place. And at that particular time, it was a good buy on a large piece of real estate. And it was, you know, it was intriguing to me. So it kind of, that's what sparked, you know, everything kind of going from that way. He didn't really like the experience that he had buying that property. So about 5 or 6 years later, I was just graduating college. He decided to sell that same property and loved auctions, loves the, the whole concept of an auction in itself. So he formed his own auction company. I wouldn't say, you know, not, it was quickly formed. It was quickly formed with a scale of what, you know, kind of a shell of what he knew to get this thing sold. And they still, even with that, was able to, you know, corral folks. They got them in the room. They actually had a live auction there. That one was really interesting for me because I got to watch it. It was firsthand. It was a house I was living in. You know, there's all this, you know, stigma of like, you know, the country club, what are these folks going to say? Everyone in town's talking about it. Where a lot of those are real fears and real, you know, real items that I think every client we deal with has. So it's kind of good for me to be able to, I've lived that. I've seen it. I had to answer questions. I knew that. And then get to watch that in real time happen. He actually took a loss on that one because of the structure of how he designed it. I mean, it was one of those that, you know, the terms were, you know, he made the terms, but at the end of the day, it did get the job done. And from there, I was kind of on the tail end of my baseball career. And I was like, you know, this is something I really think I could do. And from there, about 2.5 years later, the a family friend, they had someone that was just getting into the space and was over in business development and said, hey, I need somebody that kind of knows real estate, but not necessarily, you know, fully involved here, someone I can kind of groom. And so I went under this guy's wing and really just started to hit the ground running from then on.
So how long have you been in the auction space, would you say, now?
So just over 9 years. So getting close on a decade.
Yeah, wow, that's cool. Yeah. That's really great. Now let's just go back to this is bad on my perspective, Jesus. I didn't know your dad formed his own auction company quickly to sell his house. That's amazing. Where was the house?
So it was in Knoxville, Tennessee. Yep. It was it's actually, I think, one of the, if not largest, homes in Tennessee. It was it's funny, the square footage grew. It was 28,000 square feet, then it was 32, then it was 4, then the last time I saw, I think it was 40, and but they actually just tore it down. Wow. The new owner tore it completely down and I got to subdivide it. So it's kind of wild.
Yeah, wild indeed. That's right. So then I think that the thing that I want to venture into here is that you were part of an auction model that is one that is sort of was formed out of some people leaving another previous auction company. So they sort of took some of the stuff that other previous auction company was doing and sort of moved it over to another auction company that then ultimately they were sort of playing with the same game. I think that for those that are listening that don't understand what another auction company offers, we did a previous episode, or I did a previous episode on my own, where I sort of walked them through some of the things. Chase, I've got to be honest, you and I met and we had a conversation, and I've always, I don't know if I've had admiration, and again, forgive me, I'm not trying to denigrate you, but I've never had real, I've always had, I don't know if it's admiration, like I said, I think it's more so, I've always thought about the people that sell that model of auction as like, what's going on in their head? But it led me to this other point. It's kind of like the same point that you and I have with real estate agents on a regular basis, is that they don't know what they don't know. And I found that absolutely fascinating, Chase, when I met you for the first time, or we spoke for the first time, is that you just simply didn't know what you didn't know. Like, you'd come across the Harcourt's Auctions model in the past, and you've probably just thought, oh, it's another sort of flash in the pan, sort of other auction company doing something at the moment. You know, they might not last for overly long. But from the structure that you were selling versus what we're out there offering people now, and I often say this to the team, and you've heard me say it, is that, guys, what we're doing, there is no gimmick here. There is no gotcha moment. There is no, hey, I'm asking you to come into the room and then all of a sudden I'm going to point out the gigantic elephant in the room in this process. What we are doing from an auction perspective with our company is lowering the barrier to entry and allowing more people to use it and be able to use it in order to help them out of their traditional real estate woes. But, mate, when did you start to realize that what you were doing or what you were selling to clients was so difficult? Like when did you figure that out?
It's funny you say that, because it's you know, you get in a sometimes you have to be removed from a situation to realize, you know, what you were doing. So, I mean, I think it was, I really had to say that post-COVID is really when I feel like that it got extremely hard to convert these deals. And I don't know, you know, it'll be a long-winded answer to get from where I started to where the terms have changed and evolved. And, you know, because it started with advertised reserve auctions when I first got into business. And those are, that model and terms are, I think, are easier to digest, and they're simple, because it's like you're listed at, you know, $5 million. The reserve is set at $2.5 million. If it hits that reserve, it's sold, it's cut clear, it's easy, it's simple to buyers. But on the other side of that coin is, you know, and we might be jumping too far ahead here, is the, you know, the upfront marketing cost. So that was first started, that was an absolute, every company offered it. It was a standard. It was, you know, we were coming and asking for anywhere from $50,000 to $125,000 of marketing dollars upfront,
which essentially made it a zero sum game for the person that was involved. In essence, is that it covered the expense of, and probably the auction company made money off that initial marketing fee. Okay, if anything, you know, so at the end of the day, it was covering all bases at that point. Correct.
I mean, it's a way to keep the lights on in the business, really. Now, Now, I will say the company where I was with, they did audit down to the penny. So we would, you know, if we did have leftover, we would send it back. I did see them send money back. So it was something they tried to spend, you know, every single last penny. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's overkill for what you're really trying to do. And it's on top of, you know, getting down the line when you get to the risk factor that is involved. Cause even with those reserve options, you know, you've got $2.5 million and you've got 10 registered bidders waiting to participate. But at the end of the day, once that auction is live, it is live. There is no going back. There is no, sorry, I don't like this price. I mean, it can sell for a dollar above that number. And it's a sold deal. So, you know, we're banking.
And just to be clear about that is that ours is a completely different model in the sense that the seller is always in complete control versus that. But I do want to take a little bit of a step back here. I want to talk about, let's just talk about the auction industry. Let's separate us out of the equation. Chase, what do you see as a normal structure to what other auction companies have offered? Because when I did my research moving here, I honestly thought to myself, the moment that I saw what some of the other companies were doing and offering, I'm like, oh my God, that's jet money. Like if I can do the volume that I am used to in Australia and New Zealand, and I can take, you know, a 10 or 12% buyer premium off the end of a sale. Oh my dear God. Like I have literally hit the holy grail. You know, I'm the new Jeff Bezos. Obviously I'm not. And obviously that is not the case because I very quickly understood that was one of the largest holdbacks. But then diving deeper into it, the other structure side of it, that's what I want to talk to you about is that what is commonly seen, because we've spoken a little bit about already reserve. Mm-hmm. Okay, now for those that don't know what a reserve means, it means that there is an undisclosed number or a disclosed number that needs to be hit in order for the seller to then sell. Okay. However, then there's, you know, then there's no reserve auctions or absolute auctions, whatever you want to call them. And give us just an idea of just a breakdown of what you see us taking us out of the equation of what you have seen. And I understand that the waters are a little muddy with people changing different approaches and whatever it is, but do your best to explain what you've seen from an industry perspective over the last decade, so to speak.
Absolutely. So again, when I first started, it was the disclosed reserve. So they were big on having this reserve out to the public, known to everyone, you know, kind of like all your cards unturned. Again, you know, it was, I honestly didn't mind that model because it was simple and transparent and easy to talk about. Now the risk factor, that's another whole, you know, that's another whole element of what, you know, of the process. But once that lasted about 2 or 3 years, and then another firm started doing these no reserve auctions, which, you know, on the surface scares a seller to death. And then once you get into the kind of weeds of it, it's, you know, it's really not a no reserve auction. So they have a, you know, they're advertising as a no reserve, but then they're going to have this, it's opening bid incentive program or these opening bids, starting bids, everyone kind of calls them different, but they're basically incentivizing a buyer to put any number forth. And then and this is going to get confusing explaining it, which is great because I think it shows how hard it is to explain it to a buyer, to a seller, to an agent, anyone that's involved in the transaction. So, these buyer premiums that they're.
Do you think it's just stopping on that point for a moment, mate, and we'll get going again. Do you think it's been designed to be confusing on purpose?
100%. I mean, it's a fugazi kind of moving, you know, I mean, a lot of times, and I didn't realize this until I was kind of removed, is these sellers it wasn't that we were misleading. We were giving the information, but it didn't fully hit home until the auction's done, the numbers are broken down, and then they see where everything's getting divided, and they're like, oh my
God. And it's too late.
Yeah, it's too late. You can't go back at that point. So you've got them at that point, essentially, almost.
Sorry, mate. I interrupted your flow. So obviously the no reserve was then it transitioned into that.
Yeah. So the last probably, I would say the last 6 years has been almost all no reserve auction because it's kind of like a have your cake and eat it too. We're going to advertise to everyone, go out here for any price. Then they're going to come in here. We're going to explain, you know, you're going to pay a 10 to 12% buyer's premium. We know you don't like that. So any opening bid you put forth, you're going to get, I've seen 6 to 10% discount on that opening bid. So just for example, let's say the property again, $5 million. You want to put an opening bid in at $2 million and they have a 10% incentive for that. So going into the auction, that buyer is going to, with a $2 million opening bid and a 10% savings, they're going to have $200,000 of savings going into that auction. So everyone can, you know, can have an opening bid. It's not, you know, no one knows who has an opening bid. It's only the internal team knows. you go to this auction. So let's say they win at $5 million. Instead of paying a 10% premium of $500,000 on top, they're only going to pay $200,000 of that premium because they basically showed their card a little bit up front. But then, this way. So then that remaining balance.
I'm just going to say something that I hope that people are thinking. This is fucking bizarre.
It is. And I was on ground. We would send a representative to the property, showing it every day and trying to explain this to buyers. They don't know what to do. So when people don't know what to do, they usually do nothing, which doesn't help anything at all. But that money, those savings, are coming from the seller's net profit. So the seller is basically, that's how we explain it. The seller is paying you, buyer, to show any kind of number up front, which then becomes the reserve. So it's all a circle to have basically another reserve or a comfort level going into an auction. So we know, hey, yeah, it's a no reserve, but we've got opening bids at, $1, $2, $3, $4 million. So now $4 million is now the floor going forward.
Yeah. Okay, so we've changed over from reserve disclosed auctions to no reserve auctions, absolute auctions. However, it is kind of a reserve auctions because, again, obviously if you're following, you're following. Let's lead into, though, the sales side of stuff, mate. Like, what is typically done when you're sitting in a seller's living room, or were sitting in a seller's living room, or sitting in, doing a Zoom call with them? The hurdles that would have to happen up front for them, they would sign an agreement. Now, do they still have a listing agent? Then what type of marketing fees are up front? There's a million questions that I have on this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the listing agent, we work with a listing agent. So that the commission is even, that's the buyer's premium is one, it's a 10 to 12% huge fee, but then you've got the agent's commissions as well. So the commission wise, the listing agent was generally paid by the seller. So we're coming to the seller and say, hey, Mr. Seller, with our process, we're going to take the buyer side commission away. So you're only responsible for the listing side commission. So call it 3% generally, that's what it was. And then we're going to shift that buyer side commission into the buyer's premium. So that, that is coming from that pool of money. And then also the buyer is going to pay the closing costs. So basically what we would say, we're removing this commission and we're removing the closing costs that now the buyer's paying. So in order to basically lighten the load or soften the hit of the upfront marketing costs that we're going to charge, which is, anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000 upfront. So that model got shifted a little bit too, and over the years where some companies were fronting the marketing. So we would basically front the marketing and then recoup that on the back end, which, as you can see, could be a mess trying to get that fee after a sale that is not at the desired price.
Well, I think that's the one thing that I've got it. So that amount being between $50,000 and $150,000, some companies will front that, but then want to be credited that back if the property sells, which in essence, it's obligated. People are obligated to sell. So they're basically guaranteeing their money back anyway.
Correct.
And then I guess that the other question here, and this is a wild guess, and again, guys, I think that today we're just sharing information that, from a perception perspective could be completely accurate, could not be accurate. We don't know, but this is something that Chase has been involved in for a long time. So he's sharing the evolution of this. But I guess that the thing I'm asking is that how many of these transactions ended up in litigation? Like, it has to be, and again, we might not want to put a number on that, but it has to be a lot of them.
Too many. And that's really where, to me, now I will feel like the firm I was with conducted business as morally correct as you could. But at the end of the day, it didn't matter because the terms of the auction and what we were doing was the actual problem. I'm a people person. I'm a people pleaser. I was boots on the ground. I would work tirelessly for 3-4 weeks. I was at the property showing it every single day, running these buyers down, doing everything I could to get the highest and best price. But at the end of the day, the bidders in the room are the ones performing. And sometimes they don't perform what they say they're going to do, and which, to your point there, results in everyone being upset. So it not only is your work not rewarded, but you're also looked at as a failure to that, those clients, and then any other client in that area market that's looking at maybe exploring this option too.
there's a couple of things that come to mind here, Chase, and it might be worth us having a quick chat about, is that one, it doesn't apply to scalability. Do you think that that is on purpose?
You know, I think it might be. I mean, because they're exactly right. You can't, not only for that factor, but the live on-site auction that some companies do, that you can only do so many auctions. And that's why, because it's you can't scale it, and it's designed that way almost.
Yeah, it's kind of, and maybe that's something from a model perspective, is that it's been designed to be do one thing, one property, that property be the focus, or do only one or two or three at a time, or four or five or however many, and that property be the focus. It's kind of like they have to charge the amounts they charge in order for it to make it feasible for them. Now, again, I don't believe they have to. Like, it looks like there's a great deal of meat on the bone from the perspective of this. And I've often found when things are too good to be true, they usually are. So I think that there's definitely a structure for that. But like, mate, I want to venture into the space of you as a salesperson here. Mm-hmm. I could see you doing a pitch, and let's say that I'm pitching you. It's like, Chase, you've got a current, because you would approach the agent, mm-hmm. And say, hey, look, guys, we would love to provide you guys with a solution to go back and have a conversation with your seller instead of a price reduction. This is another angle. It shows that you're an innovative agent that is ultimately out there looking to do best by your sellers by, instead of them just dropping price, you can offer them this, blah, 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 blah. Now, at that point, I've got to be honest, we do this on a very regular basis. You do this on a very regular basis. You can get most logical thinking agents will turn around and go, okay, look, yeah, let's hear about it. Mm-hmm. Right? They would probably say yes to you at that point. Did it go through your mind at that point? It's like, oh shit, now I've got to actually tell them all of the other shit that comes with it.
No, it is. And it's funny because it's like I got so ingrained to, it's A, getting them to say yes to a conversation. And once they say yes, you have to toe that line of like, how much do I want to give it? When do I want the other shoe to drop? Do I want it to drop right now and just go ahead and get this over with? Or do I want to get them down the line, at least get their client on the phone, and then drop all the shoes? And, you know, because it is, there was no way around it. It had to be dropped at some point. And then as soon as it was, you know, not only there's multiple, you know, kind of shoe droppings though. It's the marketing fee, it's the buyer's premium, it's the risk of, you know, not, you know, there is no way around the risk. You know, you're at some point, you're going to have to toe the line and either, you know, take our considerations and what we're telling you and believe them and move forward, or not, but you're going to lose either way. You're losing the marketing money if you don't move forward. And if you do move forward and you sell the home, you know, you don't know where the price is going to be.
Yeah. Again, mate, I have to literally stand up and applaud you. And I've told you this before, is that because again, you've done quite a lot of them. And again, the reality is that you've now moved over to the Harcourt's auctions model. You are now one of our auction directors that is out there at the moment pounding the pavement and offering the auction model to agents external to our Harcourt's network, you know, that with listings that have been on the market. You've got a clear focus on the luxury market because you've had experience in that marketplace. So Chase, I guess that the reality of what we do, I guess that what is the story that you're telling people? Now, obviously, I know what it is, but tell the audience what the story you're telling people of why you've made a change into, you know, a different model. Because at the end of the day, I think that, you know, realistically, you've lived it and breathed it and pushed it. Now you're coming down in another angle of things. Now, granted, you've got to do a great deal more volume based on our fee structure side of things, but, you know, our model is geared to do that because of the lower barrier entry. So I guess that going from one side to now the other, that's the point of what we're talking about here. What's the upside, I guess, that you see?
Well, I feel like one of my strengths is relationships. It's what I enjoy. I love real estate. I love auctions, and I love dealing with people. And I think a lot of folks are looking for an alternate way to sell real estate because the traditional methods are, I don't want to say stale, but they're just, there's growing concerns. And so they're looking for an avenue. And I've always thought the auction was the avenue, but I knew it, you know, what I was doing, the way I was doing it wasn't. I didn't know what the answer was until I, you know, running across you guys. So now it's a breath of fresh air for me to be able to come to someone and say with conviction what we're doing, why we're doing it, look at what we've done, and we're not going away because we're gonna, you know, there is no bad sale here, there is no risk here. It is truly in my opinion, the most authentic way to find a property's value and be able to do that here in town where I live. I was always afraid that, you know, if I have a really good friend that's got a listing that, you know, that is fits our model, but if it's a bad sale and they know the person, or, you know, they're friends with them, or, you know, it's going to ruin that reputation, that relationship, it's, there's nothing to build on. And I think what really stuck with me, and it was hard to kind of wrap my head around, was like, you know, I've been in this business for a long time, and someone asked me, how many people, you know, can you count on one hand right now that if they get something, they're going to call you? And I was like, well, you know, the amount of people that would pop, I think I would pop in their head would be quite a few, but the amount of people that would call me is very little, because they're afraid. They don't want, you know, they don't want their name smeared in what we're doing. Not the same, what we're doing is bad, but the risk that is involved in what we're doing is not going away. And I think that is what really was, like I said, for me, so exciting to come over here and have this method that does not have risk and really puts the seller in full control.
It's funny because, you know, you and I work with a team, and, you know, we've got a couple of other guys that are, you know, out there, you know, having conversations, not as developed as what you are in the auction space, but the reality is that they're out there talking to agents as well. And, you know, as we sit, it's funny, you've been in the auction world and the sales world. These other gentlemen have not been in the auction world, but been in the sales world of products and SaaS and all of that type of stuff. It's amazing the apprehension of a salesperson. And again, you've got to appreciate that my lack of experience in any other world outside of what real estate is, and is probably yours as well, mate. You've got a little bit more depth of experience in other companies than what I do. I've obviously been in the same place with the same people doing the same thing for a very, very long time, is that my lateral thinking outside of that, or my understanding of different things, is only surface level. And it was really bizarre for me to get the boys in the room and say to them, it's like, guys, we are genuinely trying to help people in situations with their properties. They're like, oh yeah. And you're sort of like, no. Like you are reaching out to an agent and you can genuinely help them based on all of our statistics, all of our stuff that we're doing. They're like, well, no, what do you mean? Like, there's got to be a catch here. Like, yeah, the catch is we get paid if we actually help them. But that means they would probably never going to get paid anyway. So we are actually helping them all the way through the client. We're getting them more money. We're helping them understand what their property is worth, even if we don't get paid. You know, the reality is that this is all about helping the industry. Yes, we get paid if something is successful. That is how we keep the doors open. And hopefully, you know, you become, if you help others become successful around you, you yourself become, you know, very successful. And it was really funny to see the apprehension on them, Chase, and you, I think you saw it in the room as well when you were out here, is that it was kind of like, no, guys, like, this is something, you are reaching out to that person, and if they will engage with you, you should be incredibly confident, because this is something that you know can help them. You know, and I think that your level of passion for that also, it comes across in some of the situations we talk about. And I think that level of authenticity is what we can offer, really.
And I think that's what wins the business, because they can tell in my, you know, everyone's getting salespeople reaching out to me. Everyone's getting emails, calls, texts. But it's like when someone, you know, I don't feel bad when I am, you know, almost pestering somebody, because I know they need what we do. Not, maybe not now, but it might be, you know, 5 months down the road, a year down the road. But what we do is applicable to what their business is, and it does help them where there is no, you know, I mean, it's fun to do that, because like you said, there's no downside. There is absolutely no downside. Yeah.
I think you said, what did you say to me? I like some of the things that you've said to me, is that one of the ones, some of the things, not everything, okay, but what was it? Yeah, there's no black eyes.
Yes.
That's what it was. There's no black eyes. But I think that I want to lead down, and I want to sort of round out the podcast, mate, with having just a chat about traditional real estate. I think that, you know, there's a few people that will definitely be listening to this that aren't massive auction advocates, you know, because of some of the other traditional stuff that we speak about on the podcast, even though that we believe that, you know, auction is the way to go. What is the biggest mistakes that you see traditional real estate agents make? Like, you are seeing agents, I mean, from Maine down to Florida, out to, you know, Beverly Hills. Like, you are seeing all markets, communicating with all agents, you know, and there's this element though that we talk about in our meetings. It's like, I just don't believe why that agent isn't listening. Like, we could, you know, we can help them. Like, what do you see on a regular basis that traditional agents are doing that is harming them and their clients?
I think one, they don't give their client real feedback. I think those hard conversations, that we're in a world that is getting, you know, They don't want to have hard conversations. They want, everything wants to be nice and good and everything's great. And I think that's fun. And that's, you know, where I might, if I default to, that's what I want to do. But in this business, it's, you know, I think the main concern is they're not giving their client real feedback. B, I don't think they're getting real feedback. They're not out in the market. They're not calling. They're not following up. They're not actually doing, you know, kind of the groundwork that was, in my opinion, traditional real estate was built on. And I think you get a lot of information and data points from that in order to pass along to your client. I mean, I look at it like it's my job. And that's what you said earlier. That's what I love about this too, is like, there is no failure here. Even if we don't sell a property, we have still delivered the market to that seller on that day. And to me, I love that, because it's like they probably don't want to hear it. And it's a lot of times rewarding when you see them not be happy, but be almost like appreciative of like, thank you. No one's told me this, and I thought my property was worth X. It's worth Y. I don't want to sell it, but now I know this is what it's worth. And it's taken me, you know, 3 years to get here where I could have done this in 6 weeks.
Well, that's sometimes time is something they need to go through in order to realize that. However, the thing that I'm actually kind of proud of is that for the properties that we don't sell, about 85% of those people end up taking it off the market because they know that we've done our absolute best and the auction process has produced them a result that, okay, well, if we haven't been able to do it this way, then now's not the time for us to do it, or we need to take an alternative action. I think that the thing that we are selling is answers. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. We want to sell a property. We want to get paid. We want to obviously do all of those things. But we are in the nature of real estate where we're never going to force somebody to do something they don't want. And part of that journey is price. Now, final question. This might be a bad question to ask because I don't know if I would have a good answer for it either, but is how much do you believe is, okay, so a home goes on the marketplace, it spends an extended period of time on that marketplace. How much do you believe it's because the seller's stubborn on their price versus the agent just doesn't have the courage to ask them for a price reduction? What do you think is the ratio there? Like, let's say out of every 100 properties that spend more than the average days on marketplace, and they don't do the right things with price reductions or go to auction in the first degree or whatever those things are, because most agents can't help themselves with just telling a seller what a property is worth because they think that they need to have an opinion in order to be valued. But that's a whole nother podcast, by the way, bud. But I think that there's this avenue there that, like, one, yes, sellers can be stubborn on the value that they want for their home. But two, there's also the agents not having the courage to ask that seller to reduce their price or tell them what they really do believe their home is actually worth. What do you think is the percentage ratio of homes that aren't selling? There's 100 on the market. How many are stubborn sellers? How many is it just agent skill set?
I mean, if I had to go off the cusp, I would say 65, you know, I would say 70-30 is probably agent driven. I would say as you get higher price points, it might even out to where, you know, because I think a lot of those sell, what I've ran across a lot is you've got a person with, you know, for me, above $5 million, those folks have built very customized homes to what they want, to their needs, and they know the heart, you know, blood, sweat, and tears they put into that, and they know what it's worth. But that same buyer that they're looking to sell their home to can build their own for that. So they don't want their custom home. So it's like they get stuck on these value and they can be hard. But I think generally speaking, if you have the right agent in there, giving them the real hard, you know, data and facts of what's going on, then A, they don't take the listing, or B, the seller listens and says, okay, this is actually, you know, this makes sense. I don't, you know, listing up here is going to be a waste of time.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, mate, I think that I speak for Calista and I when I say, and the whole team, it's a pleasure to have you on the Harcourts team at this point, and we're already seeing the impact that you're making, first auction on the marketplace out in Arizona and a few different ones also that we're working on as well behind the scenes. So looking forward to a very, very looking forward to another decade and plus with you, mate. Yeah. Absolutely. So either way is that thanks for being on Rethink Real Estate, Chase. It's given hopefully people a good insight to understand the auction space a little bit more as the NAR thing is looming over everyone.
Thanks for having me, man. Excited to be here and excited for the future.
So about 75% of our audience hasn't liked, followed, or subscribed to our podcast. It would mean the world to us, and it would help this podcast more than you know to expand our reach if you were to like, follow, or subscribe on any of the platforms that you're watching or listening on. Thanks again.